older youth in foster care. Young people in foster care are there through no fault of their own, but the statistics show that they face many more obstacles than other kids, especially older youth in foster care, teenagers who are 14 or older. These young people are more likely to become homeless, be involved in the criminal justice system, and less likely to graduate high school. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine has a number of programs to help older youth in foster care and to assist them as they become adults and face the world independently. We'll learn about these efforts and what more is needed. Teens and older youth in foster care. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Foster care is not just for young children. There are those in their teens and even older who are in the system as well. These older youth have their own needs, especially transitioning to independence. Today, we'll learn what challenges they face and how some programs are giving them the tools to succeed. Joining me in the studio, Amen Cabral. She is Policy Associate with the Muskie School of Public Service at the University of Southern Maine. Dulcie LaBerge is the Youth Transition Team Leader at the Office of Child and Family Services with the Maine Department of Health and Human Services. And Carly Boston was in the Maine foster care system and is now a local and national advocate for youth in the child welfare system and for anyone aged 14 to 26 who has been in foster care. As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Do you have any experience, personal experience with foster care, especially with older kids? Have you ever considered becoming a foster parent? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Dulcie, I'd like to start with you and give us sort of a broader picture. How many teens and older youth are in foster care in Maine, and how does that compare with the national story?
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us on. In Maine, we have approximately 289 young people in foster care, ages 14 to 21, and that represents about 19% of all children in care. While I don't have the national numbers on that specific measure, what I would say is that at the end of September in 2017, we had approximately 1,700 children and youth in care, and the national number was around 443,000.
Okay. So, you know, one thing I'm interested in is the youth, the teenagers who are in foster care, do they represent most of the teenagers who need a home, or are there as many who, for whatever reason, are not in a foster care placement, are trying to live on their own?
I would say that it could be a combination. We certainly want to provide the best home. We look for permanency for our older youth. We always believe that all children and young people deserve family, should grow up in a family. And that's really what we prioritize and what we focus on. We want young people to be able to live at home whenever possible. And if that's not possible, we want to ensure that they do have permanent and lifelong connections.
Mm-hmm. So, but we don't really know how many have been able to be. I know you want to have them all in the foster care system with a caring and loving home, but we don't really know how many kids have for whatever reason, gotten away from that and are trying to live on their own.
Well, what I would say is we know that we have approximately 42% of our youth that are living with relatives. And so when we have young people enter foster care, it's a process in which the court decides that a young person cannot safely live at home. And that is what prompts a young person to enter our system.
Amen, why don't you talk about some of the challenges specific to older youth in foster care?
Great. So I think thinking about the transition to young adulthood for any young person. So thinking about what adolescence is like. And so think about adolescence and then navigating what you want to do for your career or your post-secondary goals while also navigating a really challenging system such as foster care. And so our young people need the same developmental milestones. They need the same opportunities that all young people need, and they need a more secure safety and support network to navigate that. So thinking about our young people need opportunities for exploring their post-secondary goals, their career goals, what do they want to do when they become adults? And so they need opportunities to explore that with consistent adults in their life. And then they need really a secure support network of caring adults that help them navigate those different choices.
Sure. So anyone who's raised young people and has a kid who's 19, 20, 21 and knows what kinds of advice and help they give their own children every day can only imagine what it's like for a young person who's aged out of foster care.
Yeah, and I think it's really important for us to keep in mind we have the extended care agreement in Maine, which is a wonderful opportunity for young people at age 18 to sign on and receive continued support if young people are working on education or they're working a career training opportunity. They can receive housing assistance from the state, but that ends at age 21, and I think many of us want to normalize that a bit and think about how long do our young adults need support. You know, my parents were still helping me with taxes, still helping me navigate getting my first apartment well beyond the age of 21. So we need to start thinking about supporting these young adults well into middle 20s, you know, or 30 based on adolescent brain development.
Carly, I know right now you work full-time as an advocate, but I was wondering if you'd be willing to share your story and how old you were when you were placed in foster care and how you did it.
Sure, no problem. I came into the foster care system when I was 11 years old, right here in Maine. And like you guys already said, life is already hard enough as it is. So it was really challenging at many times to navigate the system, the foster care system, along with just living and trying to figure out life, especially at an adolescent time.
Were you in the same foster family from the time you were 11 till when you were released from foster care, or did you move among different homes?
Yeah, I definitely moved quite a bit. So I spent some time in foster homes as well as bridge homes, at times shelters. There's a variety of placements that you could be in. And I think it's really rare, actually, that a young person stays in one home.
And Amen was talking about the extended program. Did you do that? Or when you were 18, were you kind of on your own?
I mean, on my own in some sense, but I did sign the voluntary agreement, which definitely saved my life and helped me navigate college and just becoming an adult in general. Some of the stuff that Anmen was mentioning, having support from her parents, bills and first apartments, I was able to receive that because of the voluntary agreement.
So you went to college?
I did. I went to SMCC in South Portland, and then I'm finishing up at USM as well.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, you say you work as an advocate, and I'm wondering, what is it that you're doing on a day-to-day basis? Are you helping individual young people who are hitting snags? Or are you looking for policy changes?
I'm doing it all. You really got to. I think it's important to spend time with people and getting to know them individually, finding out their goals and passions, figure out and identify where they may be struggling. But at the same time, I also know that policy work is really where the impact is made for the bigger group of young people, not just the individual.
What do you think needs to change?
A lot.
Give me a couple things, a couple big things that if you could talk to the governor right now or could talk to members of legislature.
I think it's about building social capital for young people. So social capital in the sense of relationships, not just with peers, but with outside of schools, just in adults in general. I also think that social capital needs to be a stronger bond within the community. So it's not just about supporting young people in the foster care system. It's about supporting caseworkers who are on the ground doing this work. It's about the foster parents and adoptive parents, the potential parents that might do foster care, as well as organizations.
Well, on the line with us now is Hannah Pelletier. She and her husband have been foster parents for 9 years. Hannah, thanks for calling in.
Hi.
So how did you become a foster parent? What age range of kids have you cared for?
I started by doing in-home support with foster kids. I was working through an agency providing in-home support for therapeutic foster kids. And, you know, when I got married, I really wanted to do more. So we licensed as a foster family. We were licensed right after we were married, actually. And then we've had a variety of kids. I think we've had 14 different kids as long-term placements. And we've had, you know, babies right out of the NICU, and we've had kids who have aged out of care with us as well.
You mentioned that you have done therapeutic foster care. For those people who don't know what that means, can you tell us what it means?
So therapeutic foster care is just kind of the higher level of care. Kids with... We originally got licensed to work with kids with autism because that's what my husband and I specialized in. And but we, you know, have kids with autism, kids with developmental delays, kids with any kind of like mental health diagnosis, or kids who have just bounced around from foster home to foster home. It's that can be really traumatic. So we kind of specialize in harder cases.
What would you tell somebody who's thinking about becoming a foster parent?
I think that anyone can be a foster parent. It's not just about adoption. My husband and I did not get into foster care to adopt. We got into it to help for short periods of time or longer periods of time in some cases. And, you know, we have adopted. That just kind of was a natural ending to some of our cases. You know, foster parents can do a lot of things. You can be help for biological families. You can your help and resources for the kids in your care. And then there's also respite care. A lot of foster families in Maine are in need of respite care. And, you know, being licensed as a respite care provider is just as helpful. So I think anyone can do this.
So what, in your view, is the key to making it work and helping pave the way for older youth, teenagers, to become independent?
I think with teenagers, they're all so different, so it's really hard. But, I mean, just being open-minded and trying to understand where that kid is coming from, what their experiences have been that lead them to the conclusions that they draw about your home and your family, and a lot of patience, just presenting kids, older kids especially, with their options and knowing that they're going to make their own choices, but, you know, providing them with options and then providing them with just a safe place to fall if they fail, if they don't choose the option you would choose, you know, and just being that person for them is great.
Well, Hannah, thanks so much for calling in. That's Hannah Pelletier. She and her husband, Jeremy, have been foster parents for many young people over the last 9 years. If somebody's interested in becoming a foster parent, where do they turn first?
So we have an organization that we're working with, and it's called A Family for Me. And that would be a wonderful place to call. We have a phone number, and they can be reached at 1-844-893-6311 or at afamilyformemaine.org. And I think Hannah really represented what we think of our foster parents, that they're caring, wonderful people who really want to make a change, make the lives of young people better, and that really understanding that young people in care are just regular young people growing up like everyone else, and they need a little bit of care and support.
Is it a particular challenge for older youth? Is it harder to find placements for older youth than it is for toddlers?
I would say yes. At times, it certainly can be. And I think that's one of the things we're focused on, is really having folks understand some of the needs of older youth in care, especially around the need to be connected with family and friends and relatives that they've been connected to their whole lives, and the importance of that. And also the importance of having a normal growing up experience, like their friends at school and at work and those in the community that are not in foster care.
Have there been changes? I know as a reporter, I've done stories related to older youth in foster care many times over the last 25 years. And I'm wondering, with the attention on this issue, has it been improving? Are we seeing a shift in attitudes and a shift in the system I'll turn to you, Carly. Do you feel a change in your young life?
A change with?
In terms of more attention, more of the resources being available for young people?
Yeah, I think where I'm personally seeing a lot of that is in my work, working with other alumni of the foster care system. The more that we have spaces or opportunities or groups for young people who have experienced care to be a part of, to have like a sense of belonging, we're definitely finding more leaders through that. So the more leaders that we're identifying through doing this work, people who have actually experienced the system, the more that we can turn an eye and say, hey, this is the reality of what's going on in our system.
Has this problem gotten worse with the opioid epidemic? Do we see more kids who need homes?
I would say yes. There really are a number of factors that parents can be struggling with that leads to young people entering care. That both in Maine and nationally, the number one reason that young people enter care is through neglect. And so that means that young people really are not getting the level of care that they need at home to be safe.
What if someone says, gosh, I'd love to do this, but I'm not qualified. I don't know enough about child development or kids who've experienced trauma. What do you say?
I would say that they should give us a call, call A Family for Me, and really get a little more information and make a decision about whether this does fit with their life circumstances and their families and their obligations, and that really they're regular people that are really providing homes to our young people from care.
And are there other ways that people can help if people want to be involved in the life of a young person and maybe help them, maybe say, gosh, I could help a young person with their checkbook, with navigating college, with, you know, helping them find a job. Maybe I'm not ready to be a foster parent, but I sure would like to be useful.
Yeah. So I'd love to go back to the question you asked Carly a couple of minutes ago about things that have changed. And I'd love to, we have the great privilege of working with a group called the Youth Leadership Advisory Team, which is comprised of young people in foster care 14 and up, and it's a partnership with the Office of Child and Family Services, and we're coordinating monthly groups across the state for young people. And our work is really informed by the young people that are within those groups. So we're hearing directly from youth in care around what is working to help them achieve their goals, what are the supports that are helpful, what are the barriers to them reaching their goals. And so we take that information that we hear directly from young people, and then we work with OCFS leadership and other young people around what is the policy change we need to make or the practice change we need to make. And so I would say we have a nice list of things that continue to improve that is based out of what we're hearing from young people. And so I would say a way that people could help is we have these groups. And so if you are somebody who has some great financial literacy skills, or you're someone who would have a resource that could support young people, we might be able to bring that to a YLAC group. We would be able to ask young people, is this something that would be helpful to them? And that would be a way that you could connect and help.
All right. Well, we're talking about older youth in foster care. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Salaam Circus School in Biddeford, with professional and recreational circus arts training and classes for all ages and abilities. SalaamCircus.com. And a grant from the John T. Gorman Foundation.
President Trump has one message for Congress.
Wall should not be controversial.
The deal to reopen the government does not include funding for a wall, but Trump's still pushing for one.
Every career Border Patrol agent I have spoken with has told me that walls work. They do work.
I'm Audie Cornish, where the wall fight goes from here this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio. You've heard the tones before here on Maine Public Radio and perhaps also on Maine Public Television. Maine Public is the designated primary source for the entire state of Maine's emergency alert system, which we transmit to all other stations for broadcast to all listeners and viewers all around the state. This is a valuable and important public service tool to help inform, alert, and warn citizens when situations warrant. And Maine Public's statewide infrastructure enables it to fulfill this vital task and public service.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Older Youth in Foster Care. Joining me today, Dulce LaBerge, who is Youth Transition Team Leader at Maine's Office of Child and Family Services. Carly Boston, alumni of the foster care system and now an advocate for others. And Amen Cabral, Policy Associate with the Muskie School of Public Service at USM. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Calling in now, Chris Bicknell, Executive Director of New Beginnings. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell us about New Beginnings. What do you do for teens and older youth?
We are an agency that provides support services for runaway and homeless youth and also older youth in the foster care system. One of the things that we do is have short-term stays for young people who have recently been removed from their families, and the Department of Health and Human Services is looking for a placement for them. So like 1 to 3 months while a placement is being secured and found for them.
All right. What do you still think needs to be done for older youth in foster care? What kind of gaps need to be filled?
So there is really a gap for some youth who have very high needs and are waiting long periods of time for placements. There's really no option for them other than bouncing from shelter to shelter or couch surfing from family to family and really finding some kind of interim length placement for young people who are may not ever get placed or don't want to be placed with a family other than their own. So something that kind of has safe, supportive environment for young people.
Is there a model somewhere else that, you, in your view, Maine could adopt?
Well, there have been in the past. I think years ago, all of the kind of transitional homes were unfunded by the department. So there were options that allowed for young people to kind of be in a foster home that wasn't a single family. It was congregate care with 3 or 4 young people in the same home. And having something like that that is really designed for young people who are 17, 18, 19, getting ready for independence, that provides them with the supports they need and the skills to really look at what it's going to be like when they are a young adult so that they can be successful with the voluntary moving forward into young adulthood. We also have a program for those younger people who do age out of the foster care system. We call it an ILAP program. It's Independent Living Apartment Program. And so we actually pay the rents for young people. We provide them with case management, supportive services, and help them navigate the FAFSA form and all the things it takes to go to college and be successful as kind of an intermediary for the department. Because some young people who have been in foster care and have been into a lot of placements have kind of a conflictual relationship with the department. So having a third party help manage the expectations of the voluntary agreement between the department and the young person can be very helpful for them.
Chris, I want to go back to something you said earlier, that you serve kids who don't want to get placed. Mm-hmm. How common is that a child does not want to be placed, and why is that?
Well, it's not super common, but occasionally we work with young people, say, no home but my home. And they have had a conflictual relationship with their family, and it's been deemed unsafe by a judge at some point, but they really still want to be a part of that family of origin. And so for those young people, they refuse placements, and there needs to be an option for them that is not some other family. That's not what's going to work for them.
And you used kind of an old-fashioned word. You said that you serve runaways.
Yes.
How common are runaways?
Runaways are less and less common now, but they still exist. And usually the biggest reason for someone to run away from home is because of family conflict. And for those young people who come to our shelter, we really work closely with the families, and the average time to return home is about 16 days. We have a family mediation program. So we help them identify the challenges they're facing in the home and give them tools to resolve those challenges moving forward.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for calling in. Nice to hear from you. That's Chris Bicknell, the Executive Director of new beginnings. And building on what we were talking about, Amen, you know, this program is about youth in foster care, but you want to have these services available to all teenagers and young adults who could use the support.
Sure. You know, we are definitely focusing on young people who have experienced foster care, but there's many young people that never touch the foster care system but may experience homelessness, or they may experience the juvenile justice system. And these are all vulnerable young people that are trying to that need the similar supports and resources in navigating the transition to young adulthood. And we really will do best by these young people if we help them achieve economic self-sufficiency, provide the safe and stable housing that Chris was just referencing, the network of supports that we've talked about, that with whether it's with foster families, their biological families, our community, and then the life skills that they need to navigate young adulthood around employment, taxes, getting their first apartment. So all young people connected to different systems need those same supports. And in Maine, we're a small community, and I think we have a unique opportunity of kind of coming together and best utilizing the resources we have and the community-based programs we have to really meet the needs of these young people.
Is it sometimes hard to find these young people, to identify them and tell them what's available?
I think it can be, yes. Foster care is a pretty invisible population. It's not uncommon for teachers not to know who's in care in their own schools. So I think young people in care are invisible. Young people who experience homelessness are definitely invisible. I recently heard Chris Bicknell mention that, you know, 5 to 10 in a gymnasium at a school have experienced homelessness, and you don't know who those young people are. So we are talking about young people who are not as visible to our community.
We now have another guest on the line. Heather Stott is Executive Director of Workforce Services at Goodwill Northern New England. Hi, Heather. Thanks for calling in.
No, thank you for taking my call.
Tell us about the program you offer to help young people with employment.
So within Goodwill, there's a number of programs available to the older youth that are currently in foster care or have formerly been a part of foster care. One of those is under our branding Workforce Solutions. We actually have federal funds through the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act that comes to us through our local workforce board, Coastal Counties Workforce Inc. And through this project, we match individual youth, young adults, one-on-one with a career advisor. And that career advisor provides career interest in aptitude assessments, academic assessments, and really helps for these young adults to set some individualized goals around employment or occupational training. Some may seek out post-secondary opportunities, and they're really worked with side-by-side with the career advisor. And this could be anywhere from a few months to a few years. We also, in addition to that project, we partner with Maine Leap, and that's with Muskie, hi, Amen, and with Dulce as well. And in this project, we work with the older foster care youth, more focused on completing HISET completion, which is, you know, formerly known as the GED, and then entering them, working with them to get into some short-term occupational trainings. In the Lewiston area, we have a program called Take Two, and there, again, a priority population is serving youth, the older youth population that have either been in foster care or recently stopped being a part of foster care. And we work with them on some vocational skills around construction industries, as well as, again, that basic academic piece working towards their HISET. And ideally, we work with employers for job placements with supportive employers.
Well, Heather, thanks so much for calling in. That was Heather Stott with Workforce Services at Goodwill of Northern New England. And also Libby at the Department of Labor wanted to talk about some of the Maine Department of Labor resources available to help young people as they prepare for and seek employment. There's a whole lot of them. We're going to post those on our Facebook page and also the web link to learn more about them. You wanted to jump in, Dulce?
Yes, thanks. So I would just say that within the Office of Child and Family Services, we recognize that we really need strong community partners, both public and private organizations that work with us. And so we're happy to partner with these organizations in the community, which really brings resources and supports to our youth. Many of these organizations support a lot of the other young people that you were mentioning, young people experiencing homelessness or exiting juvenile justice. And so they're really critical partners and really making a strong resource community for our young people. And just like for our young people, the network of supports is important. That's true of professionals as well.
We'll go to Margaret, who's calling from Orland. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I have a different angle here. I've raised four children, and I have 15 grandchildren. So I've got a lot of experience there, and I also have a master's degree in child development. And I've spent my professional life, some of it anyway, training teachers. So I have a big house and with four really big bedrooms and a small one as well. And my husband died a number of years ago. So I'm rattling around in this big house, and I'm thinking, what a waste. And So a few years ago, I was interested in foster care, and I went to a workshop in Ellsworth at the Department of Human Services there on foster care, and it sounded pretty interesting, and I took some of the paperwork home, and when I saw the requirements for having an inspection of the house and all the technicalities there, I realized that my old house, although it's a very sound structure, very warm, and has all this space in it, would not pass their requirements. It doesn't have a second stairway. The window sizes don't fit their requirements. So a number of things. I would have to do some major structural changes in order to do this, and I guess I don't have the income to do that. So I'm wondering, with our old housing stock here in Maine, if there's any creative thinking about doing something about those restrictions, some way of...
Sure, Margaret. Do you know the answer, Dulcie?
Well, I would say that while I don't know her situation personally, that there certainly are licensing standards and rules that need to be followed for a variety of requirements, both within the home and with the caregiver. And that's really to promote and ensure safety for our young people who are in the homes. And I would be happy to take a call from anyone who has a question. But we do have a group within OCFS that does work around foster care licensing and would be in a better position to be able to speak to those specific requirements.
So Margaret's asking if there's any sort of creative thinking. Are there places where people maybe can get grants to add a second staircase to their home or something like that? You're nodding, Amin.
I'm nodding. Yes, this question came up recently at a forum, and I do know I think the department is working within old statute licensing guidelines, and they want to be as creative as possible. So I've actually heard of there are times where they will come up with the money to adjust the windows that are needed, or that they will help find grants that can support that happening. And then it also sounded like there's a small group looking at how do they make some adaptations to make it more accessible for folks to become
licensed. So where would you advise Margaret or someone else who has a home and a heart and a place to take foster kids but maybe needs some help? Where should she turn?
I think it's the same number. I would start with the Family for Me, because they certainly are most connected and partner really closely with the Office of Child and Family Services. So they could help support somebody navigating that process.
Okay. Right. Well, thanks, Margaret, for calling, and good luck to you. We have an email from Yvette. Is there an age limit to be a foster parent? I thought I read that people need to be under 40, but there's a trend with people having kids later in life and could be peers with people who are older parents. Do you know the answer?
I don't believe there's an age limit.
Okay.
I think you have to be at least 18 years old, but not an upper age limit.
Not the upper age limit. All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break, but first a word about tomorrow's program. We're going to be talking about legendary director John Ford and how coming from Maine influenced his work. Email your comments and questions ahead of time to talk@mainepublic.org. If you'd like to join today's conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Subaru in Auburn, Maine, now renting new Subarus by the day or longer. Learn more at evergreensubaru.com. And a grant from the John T. Gorman Foundation.
On the next Fresh Air, exploring the world beneath our feet. Dave Davies talks with journalist Will Hunt about his fascination with things below the surface of the earth. It's taken him into sewers and subway tunnels in New York, the catacombs of Paris, underground cities in Turkey, nuclear bunkers and abandoned mines, and caves where ancient societies practiced religious rites. His new book is Underground. Join us.
And you can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll hear Commonwealth Club of California. Today, four leading political campaign experts speak about the importance of diversity in American politics. That's Commonwealth Club of California, coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon, right here on the stations of Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Older Youth in Foster Care. Joining us today, Carly Boston, who was formerly in foster care and now a local and national advocate. Amen Cabral with USM's Muskie School and Dulcie LaBerge with the Office of Child and Family Services. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now, Kim Lipp. She is Executive Vice President of Jobs for Maine Graduates. Kim, thanks for calling in.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Jennifer.
What does Jobs for Maine's Graduates do for young people who are coming out of foster care?
Well, I know I've been listening and have been hearing a lot of the theme around partnerships. And I'm proud to say that JMG, we are a partner of Muskie, and we are one of the private partners of Department of Health and Human Services. And we also have the privilege of working with the Department of Education and the Department of Labor to bring in the various services they offer to older youth. And specifically, we help center them around older youth who are in care. Our programs, what JMG does, is we partner with public education, so we're grounded within public schools. Throughout the state, we're in 23 middle schools. We have 84 high schools. And then we have 12 college success programs on Maine's university and community college programs. What our program looks like to a young person is it's a class that they take when they're in middle school and high school. It's 4 credit, and we are teaching them competencies ranging from life skills to job and career skills. And our goal is to help them reach their fullest potential and so that they can go on and graduate from high school, get post-secondary degrees, and pursue meaningful careers.
Kim, how long has Jobs for Maine Graduates been around?
We were founded 25 years ago.
Is there a way to gauge how well it's been working?
Thanks. We pride ourselves on achieving outcomes on behalf of our students. We have a 92% graduation rate, and that is compared to the state's overall rate of 88%. Our students, about 56% of them each year, are going on to higher education. And something that we're learning, especially in working with youth in care, is they're not taking the linear pathways that maybe, well, that a generation ago would take. There's so many options now for post-secondary education, and so many of these young people, having to work is a reality for them. And so what we're seeing is they're starting their post-secondary education. Sometimes because of their life circumstances, they need to take a semester off and work full-time, or just other things are going on. And so what we do is we have a full-time JMG specialist who's able to work with them, but we also work with their transition worker or their caseworker. Again, we're making sure that our services are aligned and integrated to help support that person so they know all the benefits that are available to them. And then what we're seeing is in doing that, they are able to continue to persist toward their degree. In fact, we've been doing this at the college level for 3 years. And this spring, at one of our campuses, for example, Southern Maine Community College, we'll have 3 foster care youth who will be graduating with their degree.
Oh, great. Well, Kim, thanks so much for calling in. That's Kim Lipp. She's with Jobs for Maine's Graduates. Appreciate that. Carly, what do you want people to understand about older youth and foster care? What kind of misperceptions do you think are out there?
Like I mentioned earlier, life is already tricky and complicated as it is. So we can all remember a time in adolescence just trying to understand what's going on in our brains, figure out all the changes that we're experiencing. And then for someone who's in foster care, not only are they going through adolescence just like everyone else, for myself, I was bouncing between homes, between schools, trying to work part-time just to have like my own money because I didn't have anybody to ask for that, essentially. All I would say is that it's just really difficult. It adds more challenges maintaining the foster care system. So just being mindful of that, knowing that these young people come with so much complex trauma. It's not just entering the foster care system. Like anyone, you don't really know everything that someone has experienced. But for the most part, you can assume someone who's in the foster care system has gone through a lot. So,
what are you majoring in at USM?
I'm studying leadership.
Oh, and where do you see yourself in 10 years? What would you like to be doing?
Definitely still some of the same work. My long-term goal overall is to become the superintendent of Portland Public Schools. So that's what I'm working towards.
Excellent. We have an email from Mary, who is with Consumers for Affordable Healthcare. She says, please remind the public that if a Maine foster child ages out of the Maine foster care system, they may remain on Maine care up till age 26, regardless of income or assets. So you guys are both nodding. Important. That's an important part of the puzzle, correct? Go ahead, Amen.
That's great. Thank you, Mary, for making that reminder. You know, young people are automatically eligible who have experienced foster care for Maine care up to the age of 26. They have to reapply, so we want to do that plug and make sure that they reapply every single year, but they should not get denied, and so they can appeal that if they did get denied.
Okay. Give me, I keep turning to you, Carly, because I'm so impressed by you. You're so young and you really seem to have it together. Tell me some of the challenges that you faced that we might not think of. Was it learning to cook for yourself or was it something different? What has becoming an adult and living on your own?
Well, first of all, thank you for that so much. One thing that I would add, earlier Chris Bignell was talking about these young people who don't necessarily want to go to another placement. And I was thinking of my own situation, and it wasn't learning how to cook. Naturally, I'm a very good cooker. It wasn't learning to cook or any of the life skills like that, but it's things like learning to trust people after a failed adoption that you might not necessarily think of.
Learning to trust people. Yeah, I can only imagine. We have an email from Ken. We actually have 2 related notes here. Would like to alert listeners to a new CD of songs devoted to the subject of foster and adoptive parenting by Maine native Lissa Schneckenberger. It is called Thunder in My Arms. One of the songs, called Look Away, can be heard on YouTube. It's wicked good. So, and then I think this is Mary, her mom. My daughter, a musician who grew up in Maine, has become an adoptive parent of a foster child and has created a stunning original song. So, Thunder in My Arms. So that's kind of fun and unusual take. Is there a community, Carly, is there a community of young people who've been through what you're through, who support each other and know each other?
Yeah, especially in Maine, I feel really fortunate to have grown up in this foster care system in particular. Because of my work nationally, I've been able to see and hear some of the other experiences. But Maine has a variety of different groups that a young person who is currently or formerly in foster care could get involved with, particularly around advocating for themselves and for others and potentially policy and other things.
We're focusing today on older youth in foster care, and there are all kinds of reasons that older youth will end up in foster care, aren't there? I mean, you talked about family conflict earlier. I remember meeting a young person whose parent had had a mental health crisis and was institutionalized, and suddenly he was 17 years old and on his own. I mean, we can't even imagine what the reasons are in the variety of reasons that a child is in this position.
That's true. And I think, you know, in many cases, there's no one reason. There are a number of factors that enter into it, whether it's neglect or a caregiver or a parent who's struggling with substances or mental health or housing of their own really needs some supports because they're not able at that time to keep their child safe or to provide the care that they need.
And is there any way to trace or track how young people who've aged out of foster care are doing? Do we have, can we look back 20, 25 years and find out how we've done in helping them?
I wish. We are just starting, actually, the National Youth Transition Database. We call it NIDID data in Maine. Dulcie is more the expert around this, but we're just starting that path, and we really do need that data to then make informed decisions around what's really supporting our young people in transitioning to young adulthood. And we certainly have their voices, which we've been very informed by, but I think we do need that data. And I think Dulcie could probably speak to how many years of data we have.
Yeah, and we our latest data is from 2016, and NIDID really is the data requirement for federal funds that each state receives. And so we really have seen that as young people report to us about their own outcomes, that young people in Maine are reporting a lower rate of those high-risk behaviors that are associated with hindering successful transitions to adulthood than the national average. And so those are things like having an alcohol or drug assessment or being incarcerated or having children at a young age.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Aman, I know that you want to, Amen, you want to look at this in more of a broader context as well, is why this is so important, not only for the individual young people who are in foster care, but for our whole society, our whole state.
Yeah, sure. As I'm hearing Maine's immediate need of our expanding workforce, and I can't help but think I've had the privilege of working with many young people who have experienced foster care and seeing the great assets they really are. And these are young people that are graduating high school at average rates. There are 70% of them are graduating. So we have a very capable group of young people when we're talking about systems involved. And we really are at the point where if we can invest and provide them the resources that they need, that they will be able to meet that critical need and join that workforce, which is going to be our neighbors. They're going to be our future parents. It's only going to benefit our larger community and then also our state's treasury. And they really could be looked at as a great asset instead of, the at-risk at-risk population.
Instead of being looked at as somebody who needs to be helped, somebody mm-hmm. who has a lot of potential to help us.
Thank you. Well worded. Yes.
Dulcie, any final thoughts?
I would just say that we really, as a community, need to invest in our young people, and that's why the services and supports really are a safety net. And so helping our young people be strong community members will help all of our communities be stronger.
All right. And what about you, Carly? What would you like to add at the end?
I think this conversation was great. A huge part of it is just having that conversation around foster care. I think a lot of people don't even know what it is. So how can you really help or support or give back if you want to? Like Hannah said earlier, just wanting to do more if you don't really know about the system. So having these conversations about foster care and normalizing it is huge.
Go ahead, Amen.
Yeah. I just wanted to add in talking about the community's perception around foster care, and I think what's really important for everyone to know is that these are young people that have come into a situation or a system by no fault of what they have done. And so that I think is really important for the larger community to realize that these are young people that really had no wrongdoing and no choice in where they ended up. And so how we can invest in their resources is important.
And I would just add to that that, you know, they're also young people that are incredibly resilient. They have a lot of talent and can really achieve a lot of great things once they set their goals.
Carly, what do you tell people when they tell you they don't know what foster care is? How do you answer that?
It's definitely tricky. I remember times in high school when I would tell somebody, like one of my peers, that I was in foster care, and some people would just not know what it was. Some people would assume that we came into foster care because of something that I did. There was like a negative stigma around it. But then even now, which is surprising to me with all of the information we have and just what we know can happen in this world, I'm still meeting people to this day, and it's hard because there's not just one answer that I would give to somebody. I even think of being on planes for this work and how I'll meet somebody and they'll ask, hey, what are you traveling for? Where are you going? And the conversation about foster care comes up, and that will be a good segue to letting them know what it is.
Well, thank you all so much for being here, and good luck to you and the good work that you do. The voice you just heard, Carly Boston, she was in the Maine foster care system and now is an advocate for youth in the child welfare system and for older youth who have been in foster care, and a student at the University of Southern Maine. Amen Cabral is a policy associate with the Muskie School of Public Service at USM, and Dulcie LaBerge, the Youth Transition Team Leader at the Office of Child and Family Services with Maine DHHS. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio. Thank you.